Good evening, everybody. It's Thursday night, December 15th, 9 o'clock. This is our COS call. We're a little late. It's 9:30, but we're gonna broach numerous and various subjects that have to do ultimately with the Committee of Safety. Okay, so starting a little late, but we're starting nevertheless. So I don't know if anybody has anything pertinent that we should hear about, any news, any new stuff. I know that Ollie's been working like a banshee over there in Colorado with Joe, and there's been some good stuff. Was Ollie on here talking about that earlier? You know, we've had some really good interviews.
Hello, do you hear me, Gerard?
Yeah. Why don't you just give a report on the latest that's happened with Joe's case. Joe's the guy that dug the ponds over there, and where the heck was he? Was he Montana? And they put him in jail.
We finally got what we wanted. Fox 31, Denver, did an excellent interview yesterday. We went out across the street from the prison. And I'll tell you what, when you get these reporters, you look, the old guys have been there 30 years, the old timers. They know what's going on. They're from the old school. We got a guy by the name of Dan Drew, an old timer. And what happened was the gal was going to do the interview, her kid got sick, so she sent this guy over. So he come over there blind. And then he was trying to catch up on all the stuff, and he interviewed Lindsay, and Lindsay done an excellent interview. And he kept asking, he says, well, what did they charge him with? And now Lindsay'd say, putting the deals into the American waters. But he was asking himself, just what is he doing in prison over there? So it turned out, I don't know if you've watched it yet or not, but it was a very excellent interview. Also, the gal from KCNC could show up, but she sent a cameraman over. Okay, now this old guy, I got talking to him, and I said, how long have you been with KCNC? Oh, 36 years. Then you must know Lance Hernandez. Oh, he laughed. He says, yep, a good man, good man. I said, well, I've known him 30 years. We go back to KTVS Sterling. All of a sudden we are old timers talking about old times, you know, and what's going on now. So that was a seed planted. Well, what that's going to do is all these reporters in Denver, they're going to start talking and spreading the word, okay? But it was very excellent. We're going to get there's a lot of seeds planted in that operation. In the process, a gal from KCNC, CBS got interested. So, yeah, she is on the send the camera guy over that knew Lance Hernandez. So today, she called up the prison, and she said, the public information officer said she would see if Joe was willing to waive privacy so I could get his discipline medical file. So I'll tell you what. If that warden don't know she's under a gun, then she's totally dead. We're making huge progress in this case. And right now we're working on Michelle Malkin. If Michelle gets a hold of it, it will go big. And what's exciting to us is Fox 31 and this dance, we gave him all the information. And another part of the story is they went over into to his van. Him and his cameraman were sitting in the front seat, Lindsay in the back, and they were listening to the conference call recording with Joe talking, tell about what happened. The cameraman looked back and Lindsay was crying. He says, are you crying? She says, yeah. But she said their reaction was, oh, my God. that they knew that they were they had stumbled on something big, that stumbled on something real. But we did not mention Patriots. We were friends. Okay, they realized we were real people, that this was the truth, this was the real deal. Nothing false about it. And Dan, he's an old timer. He put out a very good report. And he says, I'm going to be following. Lindsay gave him all the documents. He says, I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to follow up on this. Our hope now is with Fox 31 is go national. If we go national, this is going to help the P3s. This is going to help our effort big time, big time. So I just want everybody to know that we finally got over a hurdle. We got the mainstream media involved, and it's going to mushroom big time. I yield.
Okay, thank you, Ollie. So, how does that relate to committees of safety? Look, when you have a committee of safety and you have a problem, like somebody like Joe gets put in jail, you're also supposed to have a committee of correspondence within that committee of safety. That committee of correspondence is who takes care of getting the media attention, to get the word out and get the news out, gets it out to the other committees of safety, as well as to any friendly media. So, it's all part of it. This is how it works. You know, and we got some good stuff going on. You know, we have a PowerPoint that's just about ready, and it sort of targets the first responders and hunters who are kind of already doing the militia thing anyway. You know, the first two clauses of the militia clauses in the Constitution, one is to own a military-grade weapon, which would be a high-powered rifle, and be able to use it, be proficient with it. So every male hunter between 17 and 45 is already doing that. And the female ones, too. They all have these guns, and they're proficient with them. And they don't even know that they're fulfilling those two clauses. I mean, look at this nation. We have more people with more guns. It's the one thing that has really held them off, I believe. They're not ready for the unorganized militia to become organized, believe me. Because, like we've discussed in our other meetings, the organized militia, they become, you know, at the unorganized militia, they practice, they're like soldiers. They practice soldiering. But when you get the average person called up, you get every last bit of knowledge that comes out of the workforce that gets put into that militia and that gets used for that cause. And that's a great thing. That's different than just a bunch of young guys that signed up to become a soldier, rah-rah, let's go fight for the country. You got men that run companies, and they have technology. They know every walk of life you're going to get people from, every walk of life. That's going to be one hell of a fighting force, let me tell you what, because they're going to be thinking outside the box. So if they think that they're going to, you know, ultimately push the people around and win, they're wrong. And I know that it's a deterrent because we're still here in spite of all the rotten laws they've made and how much they ignore the Constitution. And I'm sure one of the things that's holding them back is they don't want to get the people riled up enough to – they're not ready. They're not ready for us to actually fight back, and they don't want that. And we don't want it either. It's like speak softly and carry a big stick, and the whole mutual assured destruction thing. That's what it is. So anyway, that being said, you know, when this PowerPoint comes out, you know, we should use it. You know, if we just gathered up those people, that as a group, and I mean, it works for everybody, but it targets your first responders, your firemen, your paramedics, and it targets hunters because they're there doing that stuff. A lot of them are into, you know, prepping and survival. And that's a huge group in America. Huge. Multi millions of people. I think it was 800,000 just in Wisconsin. Or was it a couple of states? I don't know, but it was only a few, one area up in the corner by Wisconsin. 800,000 people. That's almost a million man army. Just with one state. And you start adding in the other states of people that are proficient with weapons. It's a big number. It's the biggest army in the whole world. So, and that's here. That's America. China might have a lot of people, but guess what? None of them are armed like we are. And so, just like the general told Emperor Hirohito, you know, when he said, "Why didn't you go into America?" He said, "Because there'd be a gun behind every blade of grass." Mm-hmm. And he knew. And then when they did attack, what did he say? He said, "We woke up a sleeping giant." And that's exactly what they've done now. So getting your committees of safety established is important. This PowerPoint's going to help everybody. You know, you'll be able to put it on a laptop. You'll be able to, or you can project it, whatever you want to do. But it's very versatile. And, you know, and we've noticed some other things, too. You know, we're talking about the Constitution and the civics course. And by looking at our statistics, it looks to us that people that take and finish the Constitution course remain and move on to other courses, and they remain active, where people that take the civics course first, they take the civics course, and then they kind of like drop off the radar. They don't do anything else. Now, that civics course, it's a lot of time. It's quite a bit to get through. But for some reason, it seems that when you take the Constitution course, that's the foundation. Probably makes the civics course easier, too. You get a different appreciation for it. So we're suggesting that everybody takes the Constitution course before they even start the civics course. And that Constitution course, you could do it probably in 8 hours on a weekend if you're disciplined enough to sit there and do it for 8 hours. I was never that disciplined. You know, I work better 2-3 hours at a time, and you know, and it still doesn't take that much time. You know, how many nights can it take? So I suggest that everybody do the Constitution course, and everybody use the Constitution course in conjunction with. Now, sheriffs, we want to get sheriffs on board. I know there's some contention about, you know, whether or not elected officials should be in the COS or not. And personally speaking, I believe if you can get your sheriff on your side, that's where you want him. Man, if you can get him in your committee of safety, that really brings you to where you want to be. Oh, yes, Mom. So, if you got a friendly sheriff and you're talking to him, and he's on board, I would definitely bring him in. He's an elected official, but he's elected in his county. He's the most powerful the highest law enforcement official in the county, and he's the most answerable to the people. You know, the state police, like over here in New York State, they're the governor's private police force. They answer to the governor. They're not a real police force. I know that might piss them off. What makes them a real police force is if they take an oath of office to the Constitution. So that, just based on that, they should be following the Constitution, and they should be disobeying unconstitutional orders that come down from the executive department of that statutory police force. You know, they're code enforcement officers is what they are. And they can be constitutional police officers if they take their oath of office and they take it seriously. And basically, they're subservient to the sheriff, whether they like it or not. And the sheriffs have got to get this idea out of their head that, you know, that they're some kind of second-class law enforcement official, that, you know, Elliot Ness has to come in and take over whenever there's a problem. That's baloney. The sheriff can work with the FBI. He can work with any other agency he wants to, but he needs to have the lead. And if you can get him in your COS, you've won. That's it. You've won. That's the force that you want. So, of course, You get an evil sheriff, you know, you get a sheriff like Dave Ward who was working against the people over there in Burns, you probably wouldn't want him on your COS. Although, I don't know that it's not a bad idea to have him come in because you know what they say, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. Look at our COSs, we're not plotting anything. You know what I mean? We're not looking to have a revolution. The revolution is going to be in the minds and the hearts of the people. And you know, I mean, even if we're practicing with militias, that's what we're supposed to do. Look at every one of our forefathers that signed the Declaration of Independence was in a COS. That's got to tell you something, you know. And then they later went on to become elected officials. So there's going to be a meld between the officials and the people, but the COS is outside of like the town government. It's an assembly of people that's not controlled by the government. Now look at, I say nobody controls it. That's not true. You have any organization with no hierarchy, with no authority, with no direction, it ends up falling apart. It just is. I'm going to tell you right now, the stronger people that got a big mouth, they're going to control it. But it's up to the other people, if things aren't going right, to make a vote and let the group control it. But you're always going to have those stronger personalities that rise to the top. And it's not a bad thing because they usually can organize. You know, Chris Bryles over there in Burns, who was the fire marshal, he was a fire chief for many, many years, 30-something years as fire chief, long, long time running a fire company, which is, you know, a fire company runs like a military operation. You got captains, you got lieutenants, you know what I mean? You got a chain of command, you got communications. That's why your fire departments are a no-brainer for your COSs. That's who they are. They are your COSs, your volunteer fire departments. Get, join them. Go talk to them. That's one of the places, and generally speaking, your volunteer fire departments is full of hunters. So there's your ideas for if you want to go looking for people. This PowerPoint, I don't know. I haven't talked to Ron. I've been real busy, crazy this week, and I think we're very close to releasing it. We want to get it up and running so that you can use these things right now. It's important. You know, we just filed the paperwork up in Albany yesterday or the day before. I don't know. Every day runs into the next here. So things are going to start happening. Those are powerful papers, and we want to be able to have some kind of infrastructure in our counties that we can count on when it comes time to institute the common law grand juries, because that's the next step. It's going to be here before you know it. You know, we got a president that's sympathetic to us. And if he says, go ahead, get the grand juries running, boy, I'll tell you what. You best be ready. I mean, we're not ready. We need to get ready. And so in the COS, we could push taking these courses. You know what I mean? It's you're not doing it alone. You're doing it with a team of people. And if you don't have a lot of people in your county, join up with the next county. We did that here. Anyway, I'm going to shut up for a minute. If anybody's got anything, I don't know. We don't have a queue. I don't know if we should put a queue on. But I'll be quiet and let anybody else pop in that has anything especially pertinent to the COS that they've done or heard. Bring it forward here now so that we can share.
Hello. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Hey, this is David from Missouri. I talked to Gary a few nights ago, the Gary that does the Wednesday night call, and he was telling me that they were looking for somebody to do about a 15 to 16 minute voiceover for the PowerPoint presentation, and asked me if I'd be interested in doing it, although he said there would possibly be some other people involved. I just haven't heard from anybody on that yet. So when you, I know that the PowerPoint presentation is to be released soon. Just wanted to let Ron, or if he's listening, or even if he's not, know that if he wants to contact me, I think Gary was going to give him some information to talk to me about that, maybe, or maybe they've already got it worked out. So just wanted to mention that.
Well, we appreciate that, and I think Gary's on here, so he's heard you. And
yeah, Gerard.
Mm-hmm.
Ron will be contacting him for, we got some other videos we want to get out also. And to confirm what you were saying, I heard Sheriff Clark on the Wisconsin radio station today and Trump in his talk tonight, and they both mentioned it is up to us to organize and support what we've got happening or will be happening at the top. And they both pointed that out. I thought that was kind of unique, and that only justifies the COS in my mind. I yield.
You know what? You're exactly right. And it's like I've been saying all along, it's the same with Trump, though. You can't send your sheriff up the hill with his sword out and nobody behind him. Doesn't work. So it's the same for us. If we got our counties on board, we got the Constitution going, we got the sheriff going, going to make it a lot easier up at that executive branch when he tries to get those guys back into shape if he can depend on us. It really does take the people. It really does. And the fact that they're saying that and asking the people for that, that's a great thing. Thank you for that. It's good to hear that. Anybody else?
I would comment really quick on what Gary was just saying. Boy, that'd be great to incorporate that news story or that clip somehow in any personal presentations we have and talking to our sheriffs or other people. Definitely point them to that story, because that seems like a catalyst, as you guys were just talking about, to let people know that, hey, there's hope up top. It's just not us little people down here trying to get something stirring on a county level, that people are actually looking for involvement at our level of you know, that was pretty inspiring listening to you guys talk about that. I wasn't aware of that myself.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things going on, and you know, anybody that's up at the top that doesn't understand that all politics starts at a local level, he doesn't really know what's going on then, because it really does. I mean, look at even the top guys up there, most of them started from the bottom. And that's the way it should be, because by the time you get up to the upper offices, you know, you have more experience about how government works. At least you should. You know, there's no courses, there's no college courses, and there's no requirements, really, I mean, as far as education or anything, to be president or to be attorney general. I mean, look, we know what the qualifications should look like, but it doesn't. You can't require them because they're elected in. So, you know, the people look into them as they're vetting them, and that's what we should be doing. And that's one of the problems we have, is the committee men are not vetting the candidates. They're handing them down from the top, giving the appointed committee men the job of carrying the petitions. So we've lost our voice in the government as far as what the committee men is supposed to do. So let's get it going again. The COS starting in the county is can really empower those committee men, make them elected committee men, you know, and let them vet the candidates. We vetted some candidates here. We acted as the committee men, and we vetted a couple of, you know, the congressman that got in here, Chris Gibson, and he was put in by us people. Now, he was pretty conservative. I didn't agree with everything he did. As a matter of fact, I said some stuff they probably wanted to haul me off to jail for when he signed the NDAA the first time, because he was a West Point graduate, and they told him, oh, if you don't sign that, the soldiers in Afghanistan won't get a paycheck, and he fell for it, you know. So the next year he didn't sign it, you know, and it's nice when you got a government official and you code to him and he comes and talks at your COS or at your Tea Party, and you tell him you screwed up and you give him a book to read, and he actually reads it and he fixes himself. That's very encouraging. I mean, how often does that happen? And with Chris Gibson, that did happen. You know, I spent a lot of time bashing him for the bad things he did, but ultimately he did read what we gave him and he did educate himself, and that's what this is all about with the COS, and that's what we want to do. And that's the people holding the politicians' feet to the fire, you know? Anybody else got anything, any news, any insights, ideas? Now's the time.
Gerard, this is Tim in Michigan.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Okay, thank you. So I'm hearing your comments tonight and some that was Monday night made. It strikes me that at the local level, the members need to keep their doors open on the militia and the COS for your local elected officials. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do, and because you can't ostracize them. Look, if they're it's that old thing: keep your friends close, your enemies closer. They're not looking. If they're no good, they're not going to come anyway. I've decided. You know what I mean? They're not going to want to talk to the people. And that's what's going to happen. So, yes, the short answer is yes. You know, unless you have a very special situation.
CURE.
Where the guy is really actively doing things wrong and you wouldn't want him there. And what I would say is if you have somebody that's a problem like that, then you take a vote and you say, look, we've decided that you're really subversive and we don't like you as a politician, and so you're not welcome here. You know what I mean? I mean, if it's that bad, then that's what you need to do. And maybe that's what he needs to know. But I would not kick anybody out that comes over that's interested. I mean, what's the chance of getting them there being interested in the first place? I know in Burns there, they were so worried about the Committee of Safeties, you know, Judge Grassy there, who was an evil guy, and Ward. Grassy decided he was going to start his own Committee of Safety. Well, what happened? He never did. Couldn't do it. Nobody showed up. It was ridiculous. He was the problem. Who's going to show up at his Committee of Safety when he's going to talk about all the bad things they did to the people, all the land they stole? So I don't think it's as big of a perceived problem as we think it is. You know what I mean? We got to get these officials to sit down with us. They got to talk. They got to see that we're human beings, and they have to see that we are watching them. And, you know, my goodness, if you can get every politician to take our Constitution course, I'll tell you what, that alone would solve so many problems right there.
Yep. Thank you, Gerard. I yield.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have anything? Pipe in.
Yeah, hey, Gerard, did John and you file those papers that you were talking about, you know, with regard to the...
Yes. The short answer is yes, we did.
Oh, okay, but it's not on the site yet, is it?
Yes, it is.
And where on the site is, because I've been trying to find it.
Let me explain to you. You go, the top blue bar, highlight jury, grand jury, rather.
Okay, got it.
And then a drop-down box will come down, and you'll see docket. Hit docket.
Okay.
You hit docket, you should get all the papers filed, and when as you go down through. And this is important because some of this stuff you could actually use right now because it's very powerful, these papers that are filed. And not only that, don't forget, you know, we've delivered them to everybody, and Donald Trump has a copy, has the part, the one to him, going to be hand-delivered in his hand. You know, the letter, we wrote him a letter, and that he's going to get in his hand, and he has this mandamus to the president, or whatever we're calling it. Let's see. Let me just quick get in there while I'm talking.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention to you, though, all these things, redress for grievances, evidence, law document, these were all filed, like, Monday or Tuesday at the same time?
Yes, these were all filed. A lot of these have been filed, but they didn't file them. We paid the $400 on Tuesday, and we filed them. Now, here's the problem. They said that they would send the summonses out, but when they saw all the Congress and the Senate and all the hundreds and probably thousands of people, they were like, we can't do that. That'll take forever. So John said, well, we'll do it. We'll do it by mail. She said, you better know what you're doing. You're gonna get improper service, blah, blah, you know. And so we're going to probably do it ourselves. We have people, not only that, we're talking about some of the papers can be hand-served by people in the states, and we may do that. This is a developing, you know, thing here. You know, I don't know. there's a few things that are going to happen with this. I don't know how familiar you guys are with court cases, but first thing's going to happen is what we think is the federal attorney, the federal prosecutor, what do you call him, the attorney there that prosecutes for the state. Well, you have to.
DA?
What's that?
Is that a DA? District attorney, prosecuting district attorney?
Yeah, he's a federal DA, though.
Gotcha.
He's the federal guy in the district. He gets a copy of this because we're suing the government, so he has to get a copy of it. So the first thing he's going to do is he wants to call for a conference. And anytime you go to a conference when you have a court, that is actually a hearing. And what it does is it gives the judge the power to dismiss it, to summary judge it. And we're not going to do that because this is a court of record. And if he calls for a hearing, we're going to tell him absolutely not, that there's nothing that the judge can rule on this. This is going to go to a jury. And this is a court of record. This is not a statutory, what you're used to, court. You got to get back in line. So that could be the first battle we have right there at the first hearing. However, it's not that we can't have any meetings because, you know, look, in a case like this, it may be necessary to have meetings in as far as what their ideas on us serving people. You know, we could have said, look, it's your job to serve. Go ahead and serve them. We're leaving. We didn't make the policy. You did. When it comes time to have redress of grievances to the government, why? You guys can't handle it? Well, this is very unusual, you know. So we didn't want to fight with them over that. We want to work with them. So we're going to see if, you know, what happens, you know, as far as, you know, they have a certain power to say stuff. Like maybe, you know, in the House and the Senate, we'll probably serve the leaders and leave it up to them to give it to everybody else. Plus, we're going to fax it. So we're going to do it multiple ways, but we don't want them telling us that we didn't dot our I or cross our T, and that's why they're throwing us out. We're not going to stand for that.
I so, got a good way for you to get this information out. File it under public notices. Every state has a public notice website, which is basically run by local newspapers, and it's separate from the courts, okay? So, for example, let's say one of the people who was wrongfully indicted or whatever, you file this in the public notices, and then if somebody if they're interested in finding them, like a name search or something like that, or some judge that denied your petition for habeas corpus, you should put all the habeas corpuses in these public notice websites.
Well, one of the problems we're going to have is we have to follow the federal rules of procedure. And in the federal rules of procedure, they talk about personal service. So if they were going to let us use something like that, the court's going to have to say they allow it. Well, the court is us. You know, we have to get the magistrate to make the announcement, to yield to us to make that announcement. You see, he really doesn't have the power to say anything in this case. This is a very unusual and new case for him because the jury is the tribunal, is the judge, not the judge. He's just a traffic cop in this. This is a court of record. So they're going to have some getting used to this. We're going to have some training to do, and we don't want to do it adversarially. We want to educate them. And we think the time, you know, we're hitting it at a good time because we have some help from other ends, from the top and the bottom, and we'll see what happens. You know, whatever they want to do. I mean, they do allow electronic servicing. I believe John's working on that right now to see what we have. As a matter of fact, I think even faxing is considered legal if you do, you know, if you, and we can follow up in the mail too, although if you, you know, to do a return receipt to all those people gets very expensive. Personal service, forget about it, it's $35 a person. That's a small fortune, you know. However, we do have members in every state. Now, I don't know how many people are close to their capitals, you know, like but we got to serve 50 governors, you know, and I don't think that'll be too hard. But somebody, you know, we got people in around Washington, take a ride to Washington, D.C., and serve both houses. You know, we're going to call up Bob Schultz, Robert Schultz of We the People. You know, he served the Congress and the Senate when he did the Articles of Freedom. And I think they went in and personally served all of them, but we're going to find out. And if we can do that, we'll do that. We'll get our members. I mean, like us in New York here, it's about a six-hour ride. We've done it before. You know what I mean? We take a day and we all go up and serve them guys, you know? And I mean, they don't actually have to be there. You got to serve somebody in their office that's authorized to sign for them. So like a clerk can take a summons and sign for it, and it will be considered personal service, I believe.
Yep.
So those are the ideas. I mean, we're not sure where it's going to end up by any way, shape, or form yet. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what direction it takes. But they're out, and the court has them, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing from them.
I hope so.
Yeah. So it should. It's exciting. It's going to be very exciting. And you know, once they start taking us serious, it's going to get fun. I think it's going to get fun because I think you're going to see some results, you know?
Yeah, they're not going to know how to react. You know, that's the whole thing. And now you've got them off balance.
When they realize that we have support on the upper end and on the lower end, the guys that are doing evil things, they're the first ones they're going to poop because they're going to realize that it's game over for them. It's just a matter of time. Look, we're getting our feet under us as far as what the court wants to do, and we're jockeying. But once this thing gets running, it's all over but the crime. I'm telling you, it won't take that long, you know. That's going to institute what we're going to do is it's going to institute the common law grand juries back into the county. And I hope everybody's ready because it's going to be up to us to clean up our counties. You know, NLA will be here as a consultant and an advisor. But look at every county needs those administrators to administer to the juries and the grand juries and do the investigations. And that's what the fun part's going to be, because everything, you know, not everything you do goes to trial. I mean, not everything you do goes to an indictment either. I mean, we're going to be thinking outside the box with much of this stuff. Look, you have evil and then you have very evil. And so we're going to have, in the interest of justice and time, I think we're going to have to concentrate on the really evil people and the other guys that were. They were evil and stuff, but, you know, if they toe the line, we're going to let them go probably. You know what I mean? We're going to have to make them start working with us because there isn't enough courts to prosecute all these people, I don't think. From one, you know, we got to take the top ones out because they're the ones that let that garbage roll downhill by not correcting it in the first place. Look, when your top guy is no good and he's allowing stuff, the guys underneath him know exactly what his policies are and what he expects, and they mirror him. And so when you got rot on the top, you got rot all the way down through, and that's how it happens. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go and cut the rot out. There's a couple bad judges. They got to go. That's it. Because you can't tell me that some of these guys didn't know what they were doing. I mean, yeah, there's ignorance, but there's a certain point where when you're damaging people's lives like that, you got to realize something's wrong. Just in natural law, you have to know that this isn't natural. This is not right, you know, because they're not putting themselves in the shoes of those people. Would you do that to your mother, to your father, to your sister, to your daughter? Of course you wouldn't. They know it's not right, and then they make money on it. Besides, they've lulled themselves to sleep. So now we're there waking them up. We're going to be rattling the bars, man. I can't wait. Anyway, I yield. If anybody else has anything.
This is Allie in Washington State. Can I share some good news with you?
Oh, please. Any good news is good.
Well, you know, it was almost 11 years ago when I was an elected official that I began to investigate water fluoridation and had my epiphany on how corrupt our government was. And at that time, I joined Fluoride Action Network. And what I would like to do is share just a bit of our November 30th press release that is titled, Groups Urge EPA to Ban Fluoridation Based on Risk to Brain. We have definitely found the spot to hit them. So let me just share this bit here. A coalition of environmental, medical, and health groups have served the Environmental Protection Agency with a petition calling on the agency to ban the addition of fluoridation chemicals to public water supplies due to the risk these chemicals pose to the brain. The petition, which includes over 2,500 pages of supporting scientific documentation, explains the amount of fluoride now regularly consumed by millions of Americans in fluoridated areas, exceeds the doses repeatedly linked to IQ loss and other neurotoxic effects. And signers to the petition include, of course, us, Fluoride Action Network, with Food and Water Watch, Organic Consumers Association, American Academy of Environmental Medicine, International Academy of Oral Medicine, and Toxicology, and Moms Against Fluoridation. And if the EPA applies its own risk assessment guidelines to fluoridation, we believe it will agree that fluoridation poses an unacceptable high risk to the brain. And that's a statement by Michael Connett, our legal advisor. And what we're using is the Toxic Substance Control Act, TSCA, which authorizes EPA to prohibit the particular use of a chemical that presents an unreasonable risk to the general public or susceptible subpopulations. TSCA gives the EPA the authority to prohibit drinking water additives. We have literally put the EPA in checkmate, and they have 90 days to respond.
Imagine that. That's wonderful. So we're coming into the courts, and people will also be able to think again when they get rid of the fluoride. I mean, goodness, what a revolution.
Well, yes, because the EPA rules it as a hazardous product.
That's why
the FDA can't approve it as a drug, even though they put it in our water to treat a condition.
Yeah, it's also a hazardous material that costs them money to get rid of. It's a byproduct of making aluminum, and they got a bunch of it. So what are we going to do with it? Well, we'll feed it to the cows, to the people.
Well, it started with the atomic weapons industry, and it goes into the steel, the aluminum, the glass, but the fluoride they're putting in our water comes from the smokestacks of the phosphate fertilizer plants.
Yeah, and you know, the studies were all skewed, and fluoride was never even meant to be ingested. It was supposed to be coated on the teeth, and it did, you know, and that was the studies that were done that said that it hardened the enamel. And even that was not what happened. Is eventually it modeled them, it pulled the calcium right through the teeth. It was bad.
We're bypassing the dental fluorosis and all that other stuff, and we're going right into their Toxic Substance Act.
Well, look at that's the biggest part is the brain.
Yep, it's a neurotoxin.
Yeah, so it's like giving everybody in the United States a frontal lobotomy. It's the wonder.
Yeah, because in the Toxic Substance Control Act, it's right up there with lead and arsenic also.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, and look at how crazy they get with lead. My goodness, they find a piece of lead paint, they go into a tizzy, you know. And this stuff is probably is worse than because you don't.
Well, and what's even really worse about it is you'll find it in almost every single one of our pharmaceuticals, especially in the psychotropic drugs or the, you know, the, is that what you call them, the antidepressants?
Yeah, all psychotropic.
Yeah, they're like 14% fluoride.
Yeah.
It's a neurotoxin. No wonder it dumbs them down.
Well, that's where they want us, and that's what they do. And then they can't. They, in other words, they're not dumbing us down enough with the schools. They gotta chemically dumb us down.
Well, let me tell you, after being on this site and having Dr. Paul Conant as my self-appointed professor, calls me his A-plus student, we have finally done something that has really excited me, because we've been working on local levels all over the United States and beyond, but now we have gone right to the federal level and called checkmate.
Well, that's very good. Let's keep us abreast of what happens, what develops with that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, and if you want any more information about it, you can just go to fluoridealert.org.
What is New York City going to do when they take the fluoride out of the water? They'll never
save a hell of a lot of money.
Hillary will never win there again.
Yeah, not only is it a waste of money because like 98% of it goes down the drain, but, you know, and what else, you know, you water, you flush it down your toilets, go down your drain, water it, your plants, your lawn, everything with it, and it still goes out into the environment where it can't go in the first place because it's illegal. But if it's diluted, they can put it in everything.
Can I ask a question of this woman?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is David in Missouri. Do you recommend any particular consumer level products for people that might be interested in this? I use I have a Big Berkey water filter system, and I have the fluoride removal after filters as well on that, along with the black charcoal filters, and I trust that product. Most anybody that's probably has heard of Big Berkey anyway, but is there other products, or does the Fluoride Action Network actually recommend anything other than that?
No, we don't really deal in that because basically the only thing that removes it is reverse osmosis or distilled water.
Okay, so you're saying that those filters would be useless then?
I'm not a filter expert.
Okay.
Myself, my drinking and cooking water comes from a private artesian well, even though I was commissioner of a water district that comes from three wells and has no fluoride in it.
Excellent.
And never has. And then because the Board of Health lied, they forced us to chlorinate our system. And for 3 years, we've been fighting with them and jumping through hoops. And on December 31st, we are allowed to stop adding chlorine to our well water.
Right. You know, of course, I'm speaking from someone who does, you know,
yeah,
drink.
But you're supposed to be buying safe, clean water from your water district. Why do you have to go out and buy thousands of dollars to filter it?
Yeah, fortunately, I don't pay that much for these filters.
Some people do because they're so fluoride sensitive.
Right, right. Well, thank you for answering my question.
So go to fluoridealert.org. Don't go to fluoridealert.com because it will come up with the American Dental Association. They bought that website.
Okay.
Fluoridealert.org.
I've got another question. Do you know, ma'am, whether the atomic iodine, does that, you know, the deep earth crystal iodine that's blue, does that help get rid of the fluoride that's already stuck in our body?
Well, it messes with the calcium and all of that, and I'm not a scientist, and I can't go into those details, but I must say that yesterday afternoon, I watched a 30-minute presentation by Mike Adams, the health ranger, that he gave the truth about cancer on fluoride, and it stretched my brain to a whole new level, because he was showing the harmonics and playing the harmonics of these elements in our body. And when it was the H2O and all of the good things in the water to go into our bodies, it was beautiful sounds. But then when they added the fluoride, it sounded like heavy metal music.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, anything that is toxic just destroyed the sound of the natural balance of the elements, the eight elements in our bodies that come through the water.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, there is so much stuff that's out there that's been hidden that's going to be coming out. You know, if we survive this and we make it to the next step, we have another 5,000-year leap into the future because we have hydrogen technology, water technology. Cancer will be a thing of the past. You know, they've been able to cure that numerous ways for years. You know, besides the fact that they don't acknowledge that much of it is a advanced malnutrition from not getting the proper vitamins and minerals, and then when you put these chemicals on top of it, all this other stuff, you know, it's almost impossible not to get cancer. You know, so.
I think it's pretty amazing if anyone's ever heard of the American Academy on Anti-Aging. It's a very large group. There's 26,000 members in 100 countries. And last week in Las Vegas, 4,000 of them, mostly doctors, showed up. And they were discussing all of these things and how we can move forward to address them. To stop them, like of the electromagnetic radiation and microwave frequencies, fluoride, other things too. And it's just amazing what there are other people out there doing this that are our medical and health professionals.
Yeah, well, we're definitely in an information age, and I think we're winning the information war finally, you know.
Well, I do too, but that's supposed to happen. It says that in astrology because we're moving from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age, and it also says that in the Bible.
Yeah, well, I grew up with that song in my ears from the 60s. It's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. But anyway.
Well, it's true. It's the awakening. You know, I call it Phoenix Rising.
Right. Okay, good. And
And thank you, and I just so appreciate everything that the NLA does. It's just incredible, and you've given me so much education. And as also a member of Campaign for Liberty here in the state of Washington, I am just so excited that there are so many wonderful people like you and all of those that I've been working with over the last 11 years since I woke up to how corrupt the government was, going from our growth management plans all the way up to the New World Order, and then I found the financial plan, which has got control of us and all of that through debt and taxes.
Yep, and that's why we're all here.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. So nice to be here with you. Thank you.
Yeah. So anybody else have anything?
Gerard, this is Tim again, Gerard.
Yes, go ahead, Tim.
Thank you. Your comment a little bit ago mentioning the phrase 5,000-year leap. Is that book on your reading list?
It's one of the books we kind of started out with.
Yeah.
All those books by what's his name? Suskin? Very, very good books. And The 5,000-Year Leap is a good book, a good starter book to get your feet on the ground and really get a handle on. And that's why, you know, Glenn Beck was pushing that book. You know, I discovered Glenn Beck when he was doing the Constitution and you know, made that 5,000-Year Leap book, you know, hit the charts. And everybody said, he's one of them, he's this, he's that. And I said, look it, you know, Glenn Beck is Glenn Beck. He's no, and not, you know, I didn't agree with everything he did, but a house divided can't stand. If he was one of the New World Order people, he did a lot of damage to them with his education and that book. Believe me, you read that book and tell me why the enemy would want us to have that information. There is no way. And so I cannot believe that he's part of a conspiracy, okay? I mean, look at everybody. Nobody's perfect. We're not, certainly. You know, he's not. And not everything he does is perfect, but I'll tell you what, he did a very good service explaining the Constitution and our forefathers and all those books by Siskin, which were very good books and very good story about how he started off teaching the Constitution. Really, really good stuff. And we were buying those books by the case, and you can get them for $5 a piece, and it's a nice book. It's about, I don't know, it must be 300 pages. It's about an inch and a half thick, and it takes you right through the way the government is supposed to be, the way it was designed, the three branches. It explains everything, and it's very interesting. Got a lot of good information in it, and that's one of the books that started us off, with this whole thing. You know, it kind of came up at the same time. So there's been a lot of good stuff on a lot of fronts here to bring us to this day where we're at today. A lot of good people putting their pieces in. And, you got to have an open mind. You can't look at, gurus. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. But you know what? You certainly can glean and mine from somebody that has more information than you on a subject. You know, you use what you can use. You throw the rest out. You know, and ultimately you end up with something better. You know, we're supposed to sharpen each other. And I do believe that that's what's happened. You know who else I like? I like Dr. Mercola. Dr. Mercola is an MD. But Dr. Mercola done a lot of great research, and I don't agree with him all the time, but I've also seen him where somebody else gets on and they say, "Dr. Mercola, you're wrong, this, that," and then he'll come back and say, "Well, I learned this, and I guess I was wrong." And he actually will state when he's taught something. And that's a very good thing, you know what I mean? He's got some humility going on there, you know? But
And Dr. Mercola is working with Fluoride Action Network and supporting us in calling Chet Meg on the EPA.
He is so good. I mean,
and so is Aaron Brockovich.
Right. Really good stuff. This is an enlightenment age. It really is. It's going to go down in history as an enlightenment. I mean, look at for the curtain that they pulled in front of our eyes for so many years, and we're over there piercing the veil now and ripping that. And when we break out of that, there's going to be no stopping us, So we'll see. I don't know. I have a lot of hope. We'll see what happens. Certainly a lot of good knowledge out there. I mean, look at every day you can learn something. I keep saying my head's going to explode. I got no room for anything else. Every time I turn around, I'm going to learn something new,
Hey, well, let's move from that Age of Aquarius song to West Side Story, and something's coming. I don't know what it is. Around the corner, here it comes.
I think we're all that age group. We know that. But anyway, it's good, and I hope it keeps getting better and better. So
that author's name on 5,000 Year Leap is Cleon Skousen, Skousen.
Yeah, that's it. I'm terrible with names. Cleon Skousen. Oh. And if you read his story in the beginning, don't skip the forward. The forward of the book is unbelievable, where he tells how he came into this, the author. Real good stuff. I mean, I read it. I should read it again. It was years ago. It must have been, I don't know, when it first came out, when Glenn Beck. I'll bet you it's 4 or 5 years ago already. I don't know. And I don't know if you can still get them, but you can, if you look on the back of them, there is a way to order them by the case. If you order by the case, you can get them for $5 a piece, and I think that's such a good deal for that book. It really is. I've handed out many, many, many of them.
Does that group NTCS distribute those?
Who did? I'm sorry, say that again.
I'm sorry, the NCCS, is that the group that distributes those?
You know what, the NCCS, it might be. I bought some books through them. Did the NCCS do the Real Washington, the Real Jefferson?
Yes, the NCCS.org.
Right, because I bought those, and I believe they are connected to that 5,000-year leap. So I think they do.
Yes, they are. The 5,000-year leap is actually a reduction or a summary of the Making of America, which is a big, thick book, which has the Constitution and 283 principles, something like that. I don't have it with me at the moment.
Yeah, I have that.
All good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's NCCS.net, N-E-T, on the end.
Okay.
I stand corrected then.
Okay. I had one other, just a quick concern here for Gerard about the COS, that I believe all Americans are injured parties by the national fake news reports and the false flag incidents in the news. What can the local COSs do about this? And I yield.
Well, you know, just being aware and commenting and becoming active. Look at the false flags they've been having trouble with because there's too many iPhones out there. That Boston bombing, they had the pictures out before the FBI did. I think what's his name? Alex Jones, people were sending him iPhone pictures, you know, with the crisis actors with their legs falling off as they're wheeling them away. That really fizzled from what they wanted because people were diligent and vigilant and took pictures and really, really, that's what you do. You know what I mean? You really can put that out there. And I mean, other than that, I don't, you know, just making sure that the word gets out. And like, there's been a couple of false flags averted because people discovered them and they hit, and then they talked about them, and the media picked up on them, well, the alternative media. And when once people know about them, then they're not so quick to do them because it looks really bad, you know, to have a false flag operation that turns out to be exactly like let's say, Alex Jones was saying. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, there was an old, I don't know if it was a destroyer or a carrier. I think it was the Kennedy or whatever. It was due to be decommissioned, and they put a skeleton crew, and they were sending it out. They were sending it out to the Gulf, you know, to the Persian Gulf. And I think Alex Jones picked it up and said it was going to be a false flag. They were going to sink it and use it to start a war. And he said, "What are you doing sending this old ship out there with a skeleton crew? What's going on?" And this and that and the other thing. Before you knew it, before they got there, they turned around and went back. So they killed it. It was a very good success story because it was televised. You know, it was, I don't want to say televised, but it was put out to the public. The alternative media put it out there. Everybody heard about it. And what are they going to do? You know, 3 weeks before it was going to happen, it was all over the place in the alternative news. What are they going to say when they do it? Nobody's going to believe it, right?
Yep. Yep.
So that was a success. God only knows what they look at. We don't even know how many times we stymied them because they don't tell us every time we stymie them. You know what I mean? I do know, like, what's his name? Brzezinski. He complains all the time about all these Bible thumping, gun toting constitutionalists that he says, you know, we were supposed to be done with this and have our new world order in 20 years ago. He complains on the news about it. Unbelievable. That's how arrogant they are. You know? But, you know, and I it makes me feel good to hear him say that anyway, you know?
Yep. Well, so, thank you again. I'll yield here.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else pipe in? We're getting on 10:24,
34. Hello? Well, this might be a little bit corny, but Tuesday and Wednesday, Alex Jones was saying about how the CIA had been outed and they were disgraced and disreputed because of all their lying. And then I noticed this morning, I only get the first hour, but after 2 days of talking like that, this morning Alex got on there and he said, if he gets killed, you know, he was talking like that. And then at 8:30 Central Standard Time, he had a CIA guy on there that came on and said that it was a rogue CIA people or a few rogue CIA. I mean, it was just so weird. It was like Alex was telling the truth to me on Tuesday and Wednesday, And then he comes on Thursday morning and talks for 20 minutes. Well, the first 20 minutes he kept mentioning getting killed. Somebody would kill him, and he said all this stuff. And then the CIA guy came on and said that what Alex had said earlier wasn't the truth. So anyhow, I just am asking, let's just pray for him, because nobody really knows what's going on, but I just feel like he might be being forced, like they're doing the electorate, you know, they're all getting a visit from the CIA to the electors, and it's just dangerous and weird.
Yeah, it is, and I don't know what kind of tightrope he's walking, and you know, look at if it's just a few rogue guys, that doesn't make it any better. Obviously, if a few rogue guys can do that, it must be a few rogue guys on the top. I would say, wouldn't you? Can't be the guys sweeping the floor, can it?
No, and then this guy, he was strange to me, because he said he was trying to say that the international intelligence community had a meeting together, but he slipped. And he said to me, it sounded like he slipped, because he goes, the International Intelligence Committee, community had a meeting. It's like there's, I mean, I don't know. It's just all so strange, and it was greasy feeling, you know. So anyway, I just am asking for a prayer for him and his crew and family.
That's very good, and you're right. That's where we're at now. Everybody should be praying real hard, because we just scratched the surface here. We're not clear by any stretch of the imagination. And look, they're running scared, and you know what happens when people get scared? They do stupid things. This is international. You know, you got the CFR. All these guys are part of Council on Foreign Relations. The Trilateral Commission, all this, it's all designed to control the world. And it's not a conspiracy theory. It is a conspiracy, though.
Mm-hmm.
And every war has started with a conspiracy. And you know, they teach us that, oh, there's no conspiracy. Absolutely there's conspiracy. And now we know it. And, you know, maybe we should be giving the CIA some visits ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make some ABC coats up with black mask and stuff and see what somebody can do. take out everybody scared of them. I think they should be scared of us, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't think they realize that we're not scared of them anymore. A lot of us aren't. Well, I yield. Thank you.
Yeah. What were you saying? You guys are what?
You guys are messing with the Roman Catholic Jesuits when you start talking about the CIA and the CFR. That's where these groups were birthed out of. And I like what somebody was saying at the beginning of the call before you got here, Gerard. Where somebody was saying, I think it might have been Ave, where we need to get back to the natural law, the common law, and away from this Roman and Babylonian law system that we got in place here. But you know, I don't mean to sound like a huge conspiracy theorist to a lot of people that may not be aware of it, but yeah, the Roman Catholic Vatican Jesuit system is the ones that birthed and started, and there's plenty of historical reading that can be done on this. Nobody has to take my word for it, but they started the CFR, the Federal Reserve System, the CIA, and pretty much got the reins of control through American cardinals and bishops into those organizations. And the reasoning for it should be pretty obvious if anybody knows the history of the Protestant Reformation and the whole push and cause for liberty and our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence. Pretty much.
Well,
it all makes sense if you look at it.
So is it true that the real Jews are in Palestine?
Well, I'm not going to go there because the Jews, there's a few of them. You know, I mean, I don't want to touch on that. That's a whole other bunny trail situation. I'm a born-again Christian, so I'm going to believe what the Bible says over what a conspiracy theory website tells me. But nevertheless, I do know that the Roman Catholic Church and the Jesuits, through the Jesuits especially, the Vatican's, are very much in control of things, even apparently the Jewish conspiracy that everybody talks about, where the powerful Jews are trying to rule the world and take over the world. There's few of them that are very powerful, and a lot of them, most of them are high-level Freemasons, but they're subservient to the Black Pope and the Jesuit.
Excuse me. Not a good subject on this call. Thank you.
Okay, well, if I offended anybody, I'm sorry. I was just trying to inform some people.
Thank you.
Hello?
I yield. I yield. Sorry that I offended anybody. If I offended anybody else, I'm just after the truth.
Well, thank you for that. And this is Allie in Washington again, and I'd like to add something very interesting that is also happening, and that is with a very qualified, credentialed expert that the military, the government, and now the aerospace industry, they are waking up to getting sick in the workplace. And my source has been contacted to help them back up their claims that they are now filing with Labor and Industries on getting sick in the workplace from the Wi-Fi. I yield.
Okay, thank you. All right, if anybody doesn't have anything else on the COS, then it's 10:41, I think we should cut this off.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, this is Sue. I called earlier, and I was just interested in what we have to do to notify the, the local judicial.
Well, the local judicial, what are you talking about? Your county judge and that?
Yes, and the state. I'm close to two states. I can probably do the area where I'm at, the United States District, and, there's a couple that is close to me, and also the sheriff.
Right. Well, we've sent notices to all the sheriffs, faxes, mails.
Oh, okay.
We've done that. But right now, with this latest filing, we may be looking for people to personally serve, and we will announce that. And at some point, if you're in an area where you're close to something and you're willing to do it, we'll have a number that you can call, and we'll make sure that you have the packet to go up there, and we'll explain everything. So I don't know how that's going to flush out. I mean, I'm shooting from the hip now, because this was only, yesterday that this stuff was filed, and we're going to kind of roll with the punches here and see where it goes as far as, what they're going to require of us and what we're going to agree to, because it's as much as what we want to do as much as what they want, I mean, like, if they have a rule that's ridiculous or that's outside of the common law, we object to it, and we don't follow it. We tell them we're the people, and we don't have to follow that. And, they've never argued with us before when we do that stuff. I'm surprised what we get away with in the courts as far as how we speak to them. But we speak with authority. So, anyway, we're going to do everything within reason in order to keep it under the common law, which means, even under common law, there are methods of notice. You have to do proper notice. And we're going to do whatever it takes to facilitate that, And the other thing, noting, too, that these are our servants, our public officials, and, they should be accessible to us. And what they've done is they've made an art and a science out of being inaccessible. So that's what we're going to battle here. So, if you're in an area and you're willing to do it, just pay attention, because we're going to make an announcement.
Okay.
There's nothing you got to do. There's nothing you have to do at the county level right now. We've already done all that when we started the common law grand juries. We've made notices. I mean, if you want to notice your county and your sheriff, I mean, we had people walking the Corwantos in and mailing them in. And that's not a bad idea. That Corwanto, the original Corwanto we wrote, which is included in this case, by the way. We took everything and refiled it under a number now. But your local guys, that's good for them. When we were doing that, when we were doing the Corwanto and everybody was sending it around, Anonymous picked up on it and read it, so it got some attention, So,
great. I'm willing. I'm a fighter.
Look at that Corwanto that we put out there. What they didn't realize, that was a court case. That was the beginning of the court case, because they have to answer that. That's an order
okay.
from the people. So they didn't. The court case actually started when we issued that, and Anonymous understood the power of it when they read it, and they read it because it was so powerful. And if you haven't read it lately, go back and read it again. And make the more you learn, the more sense it'll make to you. So
I just
anyway.
Read that. That's pretty great. That's
yeah,
really
yeah. So they're not used to seeing this stuff. So hopefully we get to that critical mass and everything takes off. And yeah, look
okay.
at.
Okay, I look forward
yeah.
to.
Thank you, everybody. Look, I just want to say that, you know, there's a lot of forces out there, a lot of conspiracies, a lot of conspiracy theories. These things have been with us since the beginning. You know, this whole business, you know, of America and the right to rule with the kings, there was so much garbage going on. You know, you have factions fighting factions, families fighting families. You know, there was the group out there. They wanted to get rid of the church and the kings. But they got the bankers, and they've always had their fingers in. We know that they had their fingers in our government, because we can see by what happened early on how things were usurped. So we know they were here all along. They've always had their fingers in things, and America was an experiment, and I don't think that they really understood what they were unleashing by giving us that hope. And our forefathers really, really nipped a lot of stuff in the butt. They didn't quite go far enough, though. You know, there was a couple things that they did that they let go, and there was a couple things they were vague about that they've used every one of the things where they didn't really nail it down. They've used it against us. And so now this experiment, being it's you know 150, 200 years old now, it's up to us to fix it. We have the benefit of hindsight. So regardless of where the enemy is and why, and he's in the churches and they went after, you know, they used the Jesuits and the Pope and the Black Pope and all this other stuff. Look at, you know, the enemy takes good things and he attacks the things that are good. And he attacks them from the top and he corrupts them. So he goes to any place that has power. So to me, it makes sense that he would go into the churches, because he understands they understand the power of that to get people to from the authority that they're used to listening to in their faith, a very powerful thing. And so you have to have an open mind, but you have to think for yourself, because the truth is in there. It's all, you know, look at everything has been said. There's nothing new under the sun. And these are old themes that keep repeating themselves. It's not rocket science. It really is simpler than you think it is. So, you know, just take heart and don't get discouraged, and don't let, you know, we do upset some people in different groups. But, you know, this whole shakeup, everybody's had a hand in it. Every faction, every religion. There isn't one out there that hasn't been affected. You know why? Because we're men, and men aren't perfect, and men will never be perfect, and that's why we need rights that come outside of us from an all supreme being. Because if you leave it to man is always susceptible to all those things that make us men, and you can't have it any other way. Because we have emotions, we have drive, we have all these things, but we have to work at harnessing those things. We're like fire. You know, when we're in the stove and we're in the pit and we're doing work, that's great. But once that coal gets out there and it starts burning on its own, and you've got the whole forest burning, well, that's not so great. Now it's a fearful force. So that's what men are. And we need a higher force than us that we acquiesce to and say, these are certain fundamental principles that we cannot ever go beyond, that we can never usurp them, and this is the standard, this is the measuring stick, and that's what it's about. That's all. So go out there, get your COSs going, and pay attention. We got a lot of stuff going on. You may be hearing a call for service, you know, as far as maybe serving people, and if that happens, you know, I hope everybody participates. And look at, the more we get these COS going, the easier it is for us to do these kinds of actions. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting. We've never had this much cooperation on the top. You know, it looks like the eyes are opening up, so I'm excited. So with that, I'm going to end. It's
Gerard, did you guys say you have to pay the $410?
Yeah, we did. Okay. She said, "Well, I'll take it in, but it's going to sit here and it's not going to move anywhere and blah blah blah." We said, "Well, that's illegal." Well, yeah, we said, "Listen, we'll pay the $410, whatever it is, under protest, and you know you're breaking the law, and you know we're going to have to add you to the case." And she got kind of upset. We said, "Well, we know that you don't really know what you're doing. That lawyer back there told you to do that. So we'll take that into consideration." So yeah, we paid it, and they were actually pretty nice. There was nobody up there that was nasty to us, and we didn't feel threatened at all. It wasn't like they had a bunch of all the guards there. You know, at federal court. For us over here, anyway, the times that I've been in there is so much nicer than the state courts. I don't know if anybody else has had that experience, but they just seem to be, I don't know why. Maybe they're not dealing with all the ugly stuff like they are on the county level, you know, with the murders and the divorces and the kids and the this and the that and that. But I'm telling you, you know, they seem very much more respectful in the federal courts. And even though she didn't want to do it for, you know, we went up there before and gave them a file on demand and they took it. But, again, it didn't move, did it? They put it in whatever file they put it in, the judge grabbed it and stuck it on the side, and they felt comfortable doing that. So paying the $410 was probably worth every penny to get it to move, because now they're going to have to deal with us, you know, and I'm sure they want to get us out of there as quick as they can and try to do a summary judgment and kick it out, but they're going to have a hard time, you know, especially now. We've been through this more than a few times, and we know the moves. We know how to stop them before they start. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Okay.
So everybody pay attention, because this is it. The starting pistol went off, and the horses have left the gate. Okay? So have a good night, everybody. Thank you for coming, and I'll see you next week. Sorry I was late, but especially in this weather, it's the nature of the beast for me. Okay? Thank you. I enjoy seeing everybody here, and let's keep going. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everybody.